Hi, this is Chris from PleasureMechanics.com, and today on Speaking of Sex, we have a fabulous guest, Sherry Winston. Sherry is a celebrated sexuality teacher, an award-winning author, and was a midwife for years, attending over 500 births. Sherry's first book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal, Secret Maps to Buried Pleasure, won the 2010 Book of the Year Award from the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, and has become the go-to guide for understanding female anatomy and arousal. Sherry's new book is Succulent Sexcraft, Your Hands-On Guide to Erotic Play and Practice. It is an interactive handbook highlighting practices you can use to improve your sex life. Sherry, thank you so much for joining us on Speaking of Sex.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and speaking of sex is one of my favorite things to do, so thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Beautiful. Let's dive in. I love hearing about how people came to work in the sexuality field. Will you start us out by telling us how you made the transition from being a midwife to a sex educator?
Well, you know how life unfolds. I'll start with the midwife part, which was that was my passion and my calling. And I was involved in that world for about 25 years. I'm actually a certified nurse midwife, gynecology practitioner, RN. And childbirth educator. And I was always teaching as a sort of side thing, first childbirth education classes or breastfeeding classes. But then I also started doing what I called womancraft classes, which were sort of holistic gynecology. So when I retired from birthing babies, I was still doing gynecology part-time. And that was good and that was fine and I loved doing it, but it wasn't a passion the way midwifery had been. At that point, I was trying to figure out, well, what next? And I added one class for women about how to have better sex to my womancraft classes. And oh my gosh, that was so much fun. Mm-hmm. And then my men friends wanted to come to the class. And I'm like, no, you can't come. It's just for women. They're like, well, then teach a class for us. We want to know about women's sexuality. And I figured, well, fair enough. So I started teaching a class for guys about female sexuality. And then I started teaching a class for everyone about how to have better orgasms. And over the next 5 years, I did gynecology less and less and taught more and more. And some point in there, it became really clear to me that the classes about sexuality were really my mission, my calling, and they were just as I was just as impassioned teaching them as I had ever been about doing birth. And so I was very lucky because doing gynecology allowed me to work part time and less and less and less as I built this business. And I've now been a sexuality teacher for 15 years. And I retired totally from clinical practice in, 11 years ago now, and have just been a holistic sexuality teacher ever since.
Beautiful. And my next question was actually about that term. You describe yourself as a holistic sexuality teacher. What does holistic sexuality mean to you?
Well, first of all, I made that up because there wasn't a good descriptor of what I do. I predominantly teach adults. If you say you teach sex education, most people assume you teach in schools or you teach, teens.
Totally. If that's where it ends.
Mm-hmm, right. And I do occasionally do programs for young people. I predominantly teach adults. But if you say adult and sexuality in the same sentence, then people think you mean porn.
Right.
So there isn't a good term for what I do. And I have a central paradigm to my work, which is that our sexuality is about everything. That it's first and foremost about our relationship with ourselves, and I mean our whole relationship with ourselves, mind, body, heart, spirit, our hardware and our software, our unique fingerprint of a relationship with ourselves about our sexuality. And then it's about our connection to everything and everyone around us, that it's holistic in all of those senses, that it's about not just the relationships with the people we have sex with, although that's certainly part of it, but it's all our relationships. It's how we teach our children about sex. It's how we talk to our friends. It's what happens in our communities and our culture and our laws. So to me, holistic really is that big word that means, from the microcosm to the macrocosm.
So that's what holistic sexuality is, and that's why I call myself a holistic sexuality teacher.
Beautiful. And I'm curious, your first book, The Women's Anatomy of Arousal, really is an in-depth manual to female anatomy. And we at Pleasure Mechanics are big anatomy geeks. We really think the body guides us in how to maximize pleasure if only we pay attention to it. And one of the points you make is that the medical profession doesn't know all that much about female sexual anatomy. And I'm bewildered by this, and I think it has to do with sexual oppression over the centuries. And it's time that we start updating our knowledge. And recent research has talked about the fact that they believe that there is no G-spot, it doesn't really exist, and yet many women experience something special in this area. So what is your take on the G-spot and the clitoris and what's going on down there?
Okay.
So I know it's a big question.
Long one.
Yes.
So women have a network of structures all made out of the same engorgeable tissue that makes up most of a penis. So this is erectile tissue, and it's tissue that can fill with blood and get big and firm and more sensitive. So just like penises, women have erectile tissue. And women have just as much erectile tissue as men do. It's just arranged differently. So we have a number of different structures that are made of erectile tissue. So we all know about the clitoris. Yay. Only what most of us are thinking about when we say clitoris is the head of the clitoris. There are actually three parts of the clitoris. There's the head, there's a shaft, and then there are two legs like a wishbone. We also have additional structures made of erectile tissue. We have what are called vestibular bulbs, which are like two fat parentheses that go around the vaginal opening and reach up and attach to the shaft of the clitoris. We also have erectile tissue under the floor of the vagina, literally in the wall between the vaginal and anal canals, and that's the perineal sponge. And then, here we are getting to the G-spot, I promise. And then we have what I call, and others have called, the urethral sponge. And the urethral sponge is a tube of erectile tissue that surrounds the tube of the urethra. If the urethra is the pee tube, it goes from the bladder to the pee hole, meatus, if you want to be all fancy about it. Mm-hmm. And that urethra is surrounded by a tube of erectile tissue the same way a roll of paper towels has a cardboard tube in the middle. That would be analogous to the urethra. And the paper towels are the erectile tissue. And when that tissue is not stimulated, it's kind of like you're at the end of the roll of the paper towels. Mm-hmm. And when that tissue has been stimulated and become engorged, it's like a brand new jumbo roll of paper towels. So what people are calling the G-spot, there is no such thing as a G-spot in that sense. There is no separate structure called a G-spot. In fact, there is nothing that's what they were original describers of the G-spot called a round dime-sized spot on the roof of the vagina. So that doesn't exist. So in a sense, they're correct when they say there is no G-spot. But they're incorrect in that conclusion when they imply that there are no anatomical structures in that area that have pleasure potential. Because what you have above the roof of the vagina is the underside of that tube of erectile tissue. So is there a G-spot? Yes and no. There's no anatomical structure called a G-spot, but there is an engorgeable, arousable anatomical structure called the urethral sponge that you can access a number of ways, including by putting fingers or something else in a vagina and reaching up and feeling of the roof. But the thing about this structure is, like all other erectile tissue, if it's not stimulated, if it's not engorged, there isn't much there to feel. And playing with it isn't going to feel that great. However, once it's engorged and big and puffed up, it's quite distinct. It's quite easy to feel and see. And playing with it for most women feels pretty fabulous. So does that clarify it a bit?
Definitely. And I want to follow up with a question that we get from a lot of women. And it's about this phenomenon that at first stimulation of the G-spot area or this urethral sponge area, as you've now clarified, can feel kind of vague or even emotionally charged. And only after many sessions of stimulating it does it start becoming erotically activated. What is that about in your mind?
Well, there's two pieces of this. The first thing is just, so I'm going to sort of separate out the process of arousal from other things that go on. So for most women, the way arousal works in our body is the arousal starts outside of ourselves in context and connection and story. The arousal sort of moves to our edges. That's why we tend to like to have the non-erogenous parts of our body touched and played with. Then the arousal moves more towards our sexual centers and then from the outer parts moves in. So in playing with a vulva, if one were playing with a vulva, generally speaking, you don't start by diving into the vulva. You start by doing those other things, connecting, touching the rest of the body, then playing with the more erogenous areas. Then when you do get to playing with the vulva, playing with the outer parts, and then only at high level arousal is it time to enter.
Yes.
And so at that point, when a woman is in deep, high-level arousal, it feels good having, for most women, something inside and playing with tissues like the urethral sponge, which are very internal. If you go in and you start playing with the urethral sponge when a woman's not aroused enough, if she's at low or even medium-level arousal, it generally just feels irritating and obnoxious. And so there's this sort of, some women are like, oh, I don't like having that. I don't like having that part of my body played with. It's like, well, maybe you would if you were only doing it, or your partner was only doing it when you were ready for it, which means high level arousal. And if you go in and you play with it too early and it doesn't feel great, you shouldn't be playing with it yet, right? The arousal is not there to support that. So that's a first thing to understand about that area, which is timing. Timing is everything. And for a lot of us, for a lot of women, a lot of our partners, we have what I call premature penetration. Mm. And that is anything is inside your vagina and it doesn't feel absolutely outrageously fabulous. It shouldn't be there yet.
Yes.
You're not turned on enough. And yet for a lot of us, we kind of allow that. We're not being good guardians of our gate because we think, well, our partner wants to be in there, or they're ready, or I should be ready, or anyway. So that's sort of one piece of this picture. The other piece is how we can literally turn parts of our body off. And we can turn parts of our body off maybe because we've been traumatized in the past. Or not just necessarily the trauma of a sexual assault or incest or some other sort of physical and emotional and energetic invasion. But we can also turn parts of our body off just because we've been mentally traumatized by messages about, oh, our vulvas and vaginas are nasty, dirty, shameful, icky. The list goes on and on.
Yeah.
So whether it's because of just the messages we've gotten from our culture and our upbringing about this sort of negative feelings about, you know, down there, we don't even have a name for it, you know, all the way up to all of the invasive physical traumatic experiences that many vagina owners have had, it makes sense that we can numb out or armor parts of our anatomy to protect them. And so one of the things about the urethral sponge is it's a very central part of that anatomy. It's innervated by both major nerve pathways, probably all three of the major nerve pathways. It's inside. It's a very core place. So if we've protectively and wisely, in a way, armored or numbed or protected that area to take care of ourselves, when we're doing healing work with ourselves or with partners or with healers, that can be a profound place to work on, to play with, and to heal and open that part of our bodies up again to all of the pleasure potential that exists there. That was a big answer.
It was a big question. And a related question, in an article, you write the following. Since the average time spent in foreplay for couple sex is less than 10 minutes, we have one root cause of orgasmic issues right there. For most women, full, deep, and complete arousal can take up to 45 minutes. That amount of time is quite shocking to most people, end quote. And I agree that it's shocking and also kind of bewildering for a lot of people. Can you give some ideas for very willing lovers, for guys who really want to please their women, what that 45 minutes might look like?
That's a great question. Thank you for answering that. Because sometimes when I'm teaching about this and I say this, people get this impression that, I mean, the woman should lie there for 45 minutes and her partner should do things to her for 45 minutes. And that's not what I mean. I mean that whether it's solo sex or partner play, that there's active engagement in erotic play for 45 minutes. That can be kissing, that can be making out, that can be erotic massage, that can be sensual play, that can be, that can look lots of different ways, but it's not that a woman is lying back and somebody's doing something to her. So I think if we reframe that as not foreplay, because it just doesn't make sense, it just divides things up mentally in a weird way, think of it as warm up. And it's a time for, if you're having partner sex, for both people to get into their bodies, to get centered, to let their brains turn off, to revel in all of the physical pleasures we can have with two bodies that are not necessarily overtly sexual. So it's warming up in the sense, the same way you might warm up for a sports activity. Mm. So that's kind of what I think of it. So to me, it's the time to turn your whole body on, let your brain turn off, really get into sensations, and expand your pleasure. So that's what you could be doing for 45 minutes. And if you're framing it that way, then it's not like, oh my gosh, I've got to spend like all this time getting my partner turned on. It's more like, oh, we get to spend all this time playing and pleasuring and enjoying each other until we get to a deep enough arousal place where a female-bodied person would be in deep, deep arousal trance.
Beautiful. And one of our biggest suggestions to counter the stress of everyday life and the disassociation from the body and a way of warming up is full body massage. Are you a fan of incorporating massage into lovemaking?
Well, I didn't mention it, but my first career was as a massage therapist.
Oh, wow. So
I became a massage therapist before I was 20. I think massage, general massage, therapeutic massage, and erotic massage are fabulous tools to have in our toolkit. And I really encourage people to spend time actually in what I call the four languages of touch. Mm. So there are four positive languages of touch. There's touch that's a loving touch, a nurturing, loving touch, like the way we might hold a baby and touch a baby. That kind of touch makes us feel loved and lovable. Then there's therapeutic touch, which is any kind of healing touch. Sensual touch, which is about turning the whole body on, not necessarily the genitals, but the senses, turning on the awareness of pleasure and sensation. And then erotic, sexual touch. And so I think that we do best with our partners, especially long-term partners, when we have all four languages of touch incorporated into our lives.
Mm.
So that might be the kind of touch where you hold your partner and rock them and stroke their cheek and give them little soft angel kisses. And then therapeutic touch, which is, oh gosh, my shoulders are so tight from being at work all day and my neck hurts, and that kind of, you know, massage that's really there to ease pain and unknot muscles. And that's a great way to play with a partner. And then sensual touch, which is really taking time to do a touch that really lights up all of our senses. And then when we mix that with sexual touch, we're going to get the most full, not just full erotic experience, but full love and connection and pleasure experiences. And I think it's really important for long-term relationships that we incorporate all of those languages of touch in our connection.
Right. And using that framework, I think a lot of problems arise for couples when they go from zero to trying to initiate sexual touch without having any of the other languages of touch incorporated, and then it feels almost like you're trying to have sex with a stranger, where if you can keep your relationship warm and loving and full of this kind of affectionate touch, are you much more likely to be ready for sex when you do have the time and energy?
I think so. I mean, and a lot of these things are, we can incorporate in our non-sexual interactions, and that helps us feel connected. One of the challenges with long-term partners is, how do we toggle from we're friends, we're parenting together, we're working together, you know, we're buddies. How do we go from being that to being lovers?
Yeah.
Right. And if we expect that it's just like, okay, well, you know, the kids have a sleepover, or, you know, we've got an hour time slot here, now we should just hop in bed and have sex. And it often doesn't work, or doesn't work well. But when we have consciousness of how to keep the love energy alive with affectionate touching, with a therapeutic massage, with some playful erotic teasing, when we have that kind of woven through our lives, it gets a lot easier to toggle into being lovers again, rather than either strangers or commonly more like siblings, right? It's like, you know, that we get it, like we fall into almost like a sibling relationship. So when we do those things, it helps us remember why we're with this person in the first place.
Yes. And one of the things I love about your new book, Succulent Sexcraft, is it's full of really practical, hands-on, hearts-on activities to do with your lover. Do you have any favorites that you want to share with us that might be surprising to people?
I have no idea what's surprising to people anymore. but what my sweetie and I try to do, we don't do this, we don't always manage it, but we try and sort of have a game for the day, like appreciation, the gushing appreciation day.
Mm.
And that means that you just try throughout the day, whenever you see each other, that you just try to just be overtly, thank you so much for doing the dishes. I really appreciate walking into the kitchen and having it be clean. Or thank you for taking out the garbage. I mean, the things that we do anyway, right? But also the, you know, that was such an intelligent remark. I love your brain. I love how your brain works. So just finding those sorts of things. So that might be a game. The kissing, the wet kiss game. And kissing is one of those behaviors that helps keep erotic energy alive. Not like the dry peck kiss, but the taking the 30 seconds or a minute. It doesn't take long. And actually really having a wet lip lock, you know, a luscious lip lock with your partner. And so another game might be, let's play the kissing game today. And before we, you know, leave for work, or when we get back from work, or before dinner or after dinner, whatever, we find moments to have little kiss breaks. So it's just, there's not so much the games themselves. It's like, what can we come up with today that's going to be fun and playful and might get some erotic energy going, might just get some more heart energy going, but just we're always looking for ways to do that. And, you know, then we forget sometimes. At the end of the day, we'll often check, how did we do today? It's like, oops, we totally forgot. All right, we'll try again tomorrow. You know?
Well, and just like athletes doing drills or musicians playing their scales, I think as lovers, when we actively practice these seemingly simple skills, it all adds up into making us more proficient, masterful lovers. And then they get integrated into everything we do. But sometimes it takes breaking it down into little action items to remind us of the skills of being a great lover.
Absolutely. That's perfectly said. That's exactly what it is. And also to be loving and forgiving, because, you know, then we're going to forget.
Yeah.
And that's okay, too. And not be like, oh, but you didn't, you know, you were supposed to appreciate me.
Damn it.
Yeah. It's an art.
And so right now in culture, we're hearing a lot about the big push to find a pharmaceutical solution for low female libido. And I think we both agree that this isn't the solution. What do you propose for women experiencing low libido?
Well, it's a great question. And I will also, yes, I totally agree that they're going to have a hard time finding a pill for this because it's not a pill that's the answer. So the way I look at it is it's about consciously creating opportunities to get our sexual energy running. So one of the maps that I use is that for most of us, our sexual energy tends to be the place where we're most polarized. And by that, I mean that yin and yang energy, and so there's the energy of, there's the cool energy and the hot energy, or the yin energy is the watery, slow moving energy. It's the creative energy. And yang energy is the hot, fast, fiery container, the form energy, like the li and the qi. And we all have both of those things. But when it comes to our sexual energy, most of us have one or the other that's more central. For most women, not all, but most, our core erotic energy is yin energy. And that's what I was talking about before, that it starts outside and the movement of the energy goes from the edges and then slowly moves to the center. And that's why if you have core yin energy, it usually takes you longer to get turned on. People with core yang energy, and most men have core yang energy, except for the ones who don't, right? Because it's not so much about plumbing. But for people who have core yang energy, their erotic energy starts right in their sex centers. And it's fast and it's hot and fiery. Okay, so we all have both. But for most women, yin is our core erotic energy. And so we can think of that like a pot of water that has to come to a boil. And at certain times in our lives, it's as if there's a low flame under the pot all the time. And it's not that difficult to turn the heat up and bring the water to a boil, and voila, we're having great sex. But because our core energy is that cool, watery energy for women or for people who have core yin energy, what can happen is if that fire dies down, our watery energy starts to get cool, and then it gets cold, and then it can even freeze. In fact, the word they used to use for women with low libido, the word was frigid. We don't use that word anymore, but that was the word. And I think actually energetically, there's something to that, because if we don't heat up our water, it will turn icy. It will get cold and icy. And so, as I know this is a long lead-in, but for core yin people, if you want to keep your erotic energy warm and liquid and fluid, you have to heat it up on a regular basis. And the more often you heat it up, the warmer it stays, and then the easier it is to heat it up the next time. So if I run my erotic energy today, and again 2 days from now, and every 2 days or every 3 days, it's going to be easier and easier and easier for me to get that water hot. If I don't run my erotic energy for weeks, it's going to get colder and colder and colder. And once it's colder, really frozen, it's going to take a lot of fire to thaw it out, to melt it out. So one of the easiest ways, not necessarily easy in your life, but really simplest ways for women who have low libido to get their erotic energy going is to consciously choose to build a fire and heat up your erotic energy. It doesn't have to be with a partner. It can be with yourself. But that means self-pleasuring partner pleasuring without pressure from your partner for performance, and just get your erotic energy going and do that every day or every other day.
And can that include things like fantasizing and reading erotica and choosing to be more sensual in the world? Is it in and outside of the bed?
Yes. It's all of those things are bringing wood and building a fire. So that means when you're checking out at the grocery store and the person checking you out is kind of hot, go ahead, have a little fantasy, right? It's no mind crime, right? Have a little erotic fantasy. Read erotica, and there's wonderful erotica out there. Have erotic fantasies. Have more sensual pleasure in your life. Just when you're stepping into that hot shower, take a few moments and make some sounds of pleasure. Use your own tools of sound and breathing and awareness and imagination to fire your
your water and keep it hot. And do it regularly. So it could mean that before you get out of bed in the morning, you spend 10 minutes playing with yourself. Or on the weekend, you take an hour and you have a really hot date with yourself. So it's all of those things. The more you run your erotic energy, the easier it is to access, the more there will be to play with.
So and what is at stake here? Because I hear, you know, spend an hour on the weekend, and a lot of women might say, an hour, who's got time for that? Like, what is at stake when we prioritize our pleasure? What are the benefits? Big question.
No, you ask great. Well, here's the thing. We can put ourselves at the bottom of our to-do list, or we might not even be on it. We can prioritize everyone else in our lives, our work, our families, our partners, our businesses, our homes. We can prioritize everything above ourselves, and our well will run dry. We will be depleted, we'll be cranky and depressed and bitchy and unhappy, and so will everyone around us, because when we are, so is everybody else. And then, you know, and our life's going to slip by, and then we'll be dead, right? I mean, that's an option. Or we can recognize that when our well is filled, when our pitcher is filled, then we have lots of love and energy and pleasure and joy to give to all of the other people and things in our lives that need it. So it's we can think of it as selfish. That's what we tend to think. Oh, it's selfish to take care of myself. I should be taking care of everybody else. But it's actually just smart. When we take care of ourselves, then we have lots to give others. So, you know, when you're on the airplane and they teach about, you know, the oxygen masks dropping down, they always say, you know, put on your own oxygen mask first before you go help other people. And it's really true. We're not going to be good at doing anything for anyone else or helping anyone else if we're not doing good self-care and self-love. So I think it's smart, and I think it's necessary. And I think we're confused about that. Our culture has told us that pleasure is indulgent and dangerous. And the truth is, pleasure is a true guide, a trustworthy guide to health and love and nurturance of ourselves and others.
Beautifully said. And of course, we couldn't agree more. Sherry Winston is the author of Women's Anatomy of Arousal, Secret Maps to Buried Pleasure, and her new book, Succulent Sexcraft, Your Hands-On Guide to Erotic Play and Practice. And are there any holiday specials our listeners should know about as we approach the season of giving?
Well, in fact, there is. Right now, there's a special on books. So depending on how much you spend, you get more and more off, up to 30% off. And I have to say that I think that my books make really fabulous holiday presents. They might not be for everyone on your list, but I bet you've got plenty of special people on your list who would really, really enjoy a present that is going to keep on giving for the rest of their lives in the form of more pleasure. So
beautiful. So go visit Sherry at intimateartscenter.com. Sherry, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's really been a pleasure to be here.
Big thanks to Sherry Winston for joining us on Speaking of Sex today. You can find links to all of her books over at pleasuremechanics.com. Hit podcast at the top of every page, and you'll find links to our complete archive of over 60 episodes, including today's episode with Sherry, where you'll find all of the show notes. Also, check out our complete suite of online courses designed to help you become a more masterful lover and have the amazing sex you crave. Be sure to check out our latest course, Foreplay Mastery. You know, we hear from so many people who love their partner and want to have an amazing sex life, but just don't know where to get started. They find themselves too stressed out for sex. When they are in the mood, their partner's not in the mood, and they find it really hard to connect the dots and have the frequency of sex they want, the kind of sex they want, and the kind of orgasms they want. So we designed this course to take you step by step into creating the sex life you crave. We talk about how how to get in the mood for sex, how to fearlessly initiate sex, and then once you're in bed, what to do with every inch of your lover's skin to get them really turned on, and then how to give them the most explosive, mind-blowing orgasms possible. It's an essential course if you want to become a masterful lover. We're super excited about it. Check out Foreplay Mastery at PleasureMechanics.com. And again, use Speaking of Sex at checkout for 20% off this or any of our other online courses. You can give our online courses as a gift to your lover this holiday season. If you want to wrap something under the tree, buy a bottle of massage oil, a candle, a bar of chocolate, and we've even designed customized holiday cards that you can print out, wrap up, seal with a kiss, and tell your lover that 2015 is going to be your most orgasmic year yet. I'm Chris. This is Speaking of Sex. We'll see you next week. Cheers.